This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You have year-end goals. Constant Contact has what it takes to help you meet them faster. Sell more, raise more, and build real relationships with your audience with Constant Contact's digital marketing tools, all made to fast-track your success. Put the go in your 2024 goals with email, social, SMS, and customized marketing campaigns built for you in just a few clicks. Ready, set, go to ConstantContact.com and start your free trial today.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
And Jane Duker has this Friday off, and we have no roundtable next week because of Thanksgiving. So this is the pre-Thanksgiving roundtable. Donna Behringer pinch hitting. She is a state rep and candidate for St. Louis City Comptroller. Former State Senator Jeff Smith, who is the executive director of the Missouri Housing Association. Well,
that was 15
about
years ago.
Freudian slip. Freudian slip. And the mayor of Eureka, Sean Flower, is here. Sean, how excited are you about DOGE actually having an impact? The way that I've kind of framed this year the last couple of weeks is I voted for Ronald Reagan in 1984 as the first president I voted for. I've been, philosophically a conservative, less government influence, less government spending, but it's never really happened. You know, over decades and decades, Republican control, Republican presidents, we never turned the clock back. This is a big challenge. But I think the two guys that are appointed to head this up are the right guys, and I do have some hope that maybe they can get something done.
Yeah, I think two things are different. We've never had debt that's skyrocketed like it has when you look at the charts and all that. And I always look at things and say that, you know, you're going to have to grow, but there's a true problem. And it seems like more people on both sides of the aisle are starting to recognize that this is an unsustainable, it's a security risk. You just can't keep borrowing trillions and trillions of dollars endlessly. So I do think people are actually more realistic. There's a problem. And I actually think, I just don't know how you write off two guys that have no reason. They don't have to be there. They're incredibly wealthy, incredibly successful. You got a guy that's trying to help people with brain implants, launching rockets, trying to put life on Mars. And if they're willing to take time unpaid to go in there and work on these issues with other, I'm sure they're going to have tons of talented people that understand where the real issues are. But things like, hey, shouldn't everybody go to work, in the government if they're there instead of the remote? And they had some interesting one like, 70% of the federal buildings are empty in Washington, D.C. at times because they just don't need the space. I mean, there's a lot of increasing sales of products that we have generated off the properties. I mean, there's so much to do, and I'm excited that citizens and people out there want to put their time in, and I do think they have Trump's ear, and I think there's an opportunity to get something done.
I don't know where this is going to land. The one thing that I will say, because I've always been honest about this and I've talked about it for decades, is really the only way to get to the true spending issues are the entitlements, Social Security, Medicare. No one's going to touch that. There doesn't seem to be any plan for that, so that's a bit of a concern. When we're talking about discretionary spending, it's not, in the whole scheme of things, it's but a chunk of what we spend. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't think we should go after some of that and make things more efficient, but the reality of it all is it's going to be tough to reduce deficits.
Well, they did something similar in Jeff City for government efficiency. We had a committee that was put together.
Right, but we have a balanced budget amendment in Missouri, so that makes a difference, doesn't it?
Well, what I'm trying to say is you have people come in who don't understand how government works, and then they start thinking, oh, well, this is a simple thing. I'm going to get rid of this. I'm going to get rid of that. And then they realize, oh, you can't do that. It's multifaceted. And so,
well, there will be some of that.
Well, I'll give you an example. I mean, the younger people are coming in and they're going, oh my God, look at these pensions. They're horrible. We need to get rid of them. You can't just get rid of a pension. And so then when they find out how they work and why they're there, it's a whole nother ballgame. So I want people to understand, we all want government efficiency, but first you have to understand why it's there before you decide to just get
rid
of it.
But don't you think there's also, Jeff, there's a disconnect, because this is something I've said for a long time, too. Look, we've all gone through ups and downs in the economy. We're all old enough to see, you know, unemployment spike, and I've been out of work a couple of times. The only people I know that are never out of work are people that work for the federal government or state government or city government or county government. They never get, I'm not trying to just lay off people indiscriminately, but you can't tell me that there's not efficiency issues in government everywhere, and these civil servants are making a lot of money, the majority of them over six figures. So we need to take a look at that. That's fair game.
Look, I agree with you wholeheartedly. The first 20 years ago when I ran for office the first time, you know, as a liberal Democrat, the number one issue I ran on was deficit and debt reduction. And that was when the national debt was $5.6 trillion. And now it's about 32, I think, 33 trillion. And so, but you're another thing you're right about is that both parties are guilty. You know, the president who put the most deficit was Trump, $7.8 trillion during his 4 years. Biden has been almost as much debt will be during these 4 years. But it is four things, basically, the federal budget. It's Medicare, Social Security, defense spending, and interest on the debt. Interest on the debt right now is more than 10% of our budget every year, and it gets us nothing. And, you know, that's infuriating. At least the other things we spend, you know, money on.
Well, on the defense budget, that is a constitutional responsibility.
And, yeah. So, but I think, you know, defense is about $1 trillion a year as well. And we're going to need to take a hard look at that. We're going to have to do some unpopular things.
I'm willing to
do that. I'm glad to see DOGE happen. And I hope that just because they are, you know, Trump's appointees, I hope that that doesn't make Democrats reflexively polarize against their recommendations.
But on the military spending in particular, look, it's easy to say cut, cut, cut. But then you say, oh, wait, my neighbor works for Boeing, or, you know, my brother-in-law. There's people that are affected by the cuts. And those are the types of things that will start to be absorbed. So it's not an easy job in any way, shape, or form.
I think one of the biggest
things. But I think we got to try.
But I think, too, I think the one reason they may change, too, is I think people now uniquely, they associate government spending and federal spending with inflation. And there's just a different way people are looking about stuff. They're seeing the impact of the spending on themselves, and you're going to keep seeing it if we don't deal with it. And I just think there's more of an opportunity here than there's been in the past.
Well, I hope so. But the realistic opportunity, Jeff, is just 2 years, isn't it? I mean, this is one of the reasons they're not wasting any time, because you got to get moving on some of this stuff. And 2 years is not that long in the whole scheme of cutting federal budgets restrain spending.
I think if I'm interpreting what you're saying there's definitely going to be a Republican trifecta for the next 2 years, and so they could kind of push stuff through. But historically speaking, the times when we've actually done best in modern history on the budget has been when we have divided control. And that was like in the 90s, for most of the 90s, you had a Democratic administration and the Republicans in Congress held some of Clinton's bigger spending plans in check. And Clinton vetoed some of the tax cuts that they passed, right? And so neither party could do what they wanted, the budget-busting things that they wanted to do. And so sometimes divided party control has actually been good.
The numbers are narrow, though. So, you know, I think that the majority is narrow. You have very moderate Republicans in the Senate, for sure.
I just hope that people take a look at Medicare and Social Security and see what the demographers and actuaries are saying, which is that in 2030, you know, the mid-2030s, both of them are going to face deep cuts if we don't act now. And every year that you wait to act, it becomes the cuts that you have to make will become more draconian.
So I spent a lot of time talking to a guy in 2004 about Social Security reform, and it was a pretty serious effort back then. And that's a guy that is not even welcome in the Republican Party at this point. And that's disappointing to me, because he's a friend, and I thought he was full of conservative principles and really worked hard at this after he worked for Jack Kemp, and that's former Speaker Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan, he was a freshman in the late 90s when I was in Milwaukee. He started working on this stuff. He was a policy wonk. That's what he did. He worked with Jack Kemp. He was looking for governmental efficiency. But that was one of those things where there was no political courage outside of a few people to get things done. And the numbers weren't there either at that point, I don't think.
And yeah, and as you indicated, now he's now kind of persona non grata within the Republican Party based on his, you know, tensions with Trump.
Right. But he's certainly someone who still stands for conservative principles. But the whole thing is just upside down at this point. You know, nobody even knows what conservative principles are. And
I think conservative principles are owning the libs.
Well, we've done that, so that's successful. What did you think of our bathroom experience on Capitol Hill this week with Nancy Mace and the trans congressperson from Delaware, Sean?
I think it's interesting, because you're seeing such a backlash to the, I guess I would say, to the uh, to to always accommodating a trans issue. And Nancy Mace is kind of an interesting spokesman on it, having been a sexual assault victim and then saying, okay, I want to, you know, she makes pretty plain and broad points. What's interesting to me is the media seems outraged at it. People that are down there seem like they keep catching her in a gotcha moment. And I really think that it's something the Democratic Party should stop for a minute, because I don't think the way people that voted this year hear her is the way it sounds when they interview her. I think most people are like, yeah, don't go in the bathroom here. You know, I don't think they want to spend the rest of the session on it, but it reflects the broader sense of, like, just the average right. person out there. I don't want to talk about this anymore. You can do what you want on
it,
your own.
It's a common sense issue.
But are we going to have the bathroom police now? That's what I can't figure out. Is someone going to stand outside these bathrooms to check to see if you're okay to go in?
I hope not.
But it's symbolic of the bigger issue around the country, like that I think Riley Gaines has done such a good job with, is, you know, is it okay to have a male athlete in all these female sports, you know, and especially those volleyball teams out west that are protesting against that.
Well, that's a big deal right now, because there's a Title IX
suit. It's all the same issue. It's like, are we going to, you can say, well, it's the bathroom police, but should we have athlete police that says, hey, there's obviously a male dominating the sport, taking away opportunities and hurting women. Should we even ask or not, or is it okay? I mean, it's a tougher issue than that. It's a bigger cultural issue, and I think it's really changed.
I got a text from a more moderate, but certainly more moderate liberal friend this week that I won't identify because people know who he is, but it said, now here's a reason I'm happy the orange Oompa Loompa won. Enough of this blank. And it was the Biden tweet from this week. Today on Transgender Day of Remembrance, we mourn the transgender Americans whose lives were taken in horrific acts of violence. What about the kids that were shot dead by the trans shooters, many of them across the country, in some of these school shootings? I mean, the American people, you want to do what you want to do. This, you know, Tim McBride, Sarah McBride, do your thing. That's fine. But it's gone way, way too far. And the they, them stuff, people are tired of it. And now they feel a little bit more comfortable with speaking out about it, I right. think,
Look,
too.
I think Sarah McBride handled it exactly as she should have, you know, which is, I didn't come here to be a spokesman for trans causes. I came here to represent people in Delaware.
She said she would follow the rules.
And I'll follow the rule. And I wish someone would have actually respected me enough to come ask me, because I never intended to go into any, like, multi-stall female bathroom. I always intended to
But wait a second. That's not completely true, though, because posted okay, but she's posted selfies of herself in a you know, women's restroom before. And as I indicated yesterday, the people that don't have to do that are the women who know that they're in the right restroom. So she's drawn a little attention to this herself as well.
Well, and speaking of drawing attention to oneself, you know, I could spend a year in the Sahara Desert with no water and not be as thirsty as Nancy Mace.
I thought it was kind of fun this week. She was on fire. Hang on, we got one more segment to go. It's a Reardon Roundtable on a Friday.
Get more at 971talk.com.